Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Rosebud. Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 514, the not necessarily the box office report for the week ending October 6th, 2019.
Is that what we're going with, the not necessarily the box
office report? We can't call it not the box office report because we do a box office.
That's true, we do.
That's true.
We could call it not just the box
not
office.
Not just the box office. We need to start putting letters into it.
I can't believe it's not box office.
Yeah. Kevin's like, necessarily sounds hard to spell. I don't want to call it that.
It's too many words.
I don't know. It reminds me of, there was a, you guys probably don't remember, there used to be a show on HBO that was, they were trying to have kind of their own SNL.
Okay.
And it was called Not Necessarily the News.
Oh, really? No.
And it was like, it was like if you just took Weekend Update,
yeah, and made
and
it
did
into
that,
a show.
And did that, and they had a couple other sketches, and that's where Rich Hall's Sniglets came from.
Oh. What is that? I've never heard of that.
Oh my God, I feel a million years old. Okay, do you know what Sniglets are?
I don't. I know who Rich Hall is.
Okay, so Rich Hall, he ended up on SNL for a little while, but he had this thing, and I mean, it was insanely popular. Like, he turned it into a book. They put out four or five of the books, and it was And Sniglets were words for things that don't have words.
Oh, then yes, I do know that.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the one that I always remember is like when you approach like a counter at a fast food restaurant and they have the little stanchion cues,
yeah,
and then you have to walk through it even though there's nobody else there.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's called furbling.
I like it.
And so he would just make up like little
That's funny.
Weird items or situations in which you find yourself, and he would come up with a word for it.
That's
and
pretty
so,
good.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, he had a book deal, put up three, four books.
Wow. Really?
Sniglets. Yeah.
Man.
I'd never heard of that before.
Yeah.
Did that transfer to SNL? Did he take that to SNL?
I don't think Sniglets did. Hmm. I think he had a character or two that made the jump, but I don't think Sniglets did. But
okay.
Anyway.
Interesting.
So there's your...
How many times have they tried to get SNL to do Weekend Update as like a half hour?
Twice? I think just twice that I remember.
I feel like the last one was not bad. It was pretty good.
They were doing it like during election year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because they did
or
it once
like
with
off seasons.
They did it in the summer, right?
Yeah.
They did it once with Seth Meyers, right? And then they did it again with
these two.
Yeah, with there we go. All I could think was Michael Che.
The one guy, you know. The head writer of SNL.
I know. I just blanked out.
Mr. Scarlett Johansson.
Mr. Scarlett Johansson.
Somehow.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised to see that come back this year.
I feel like this is, yeah.
You know, during the election
cycle. If these two guys stick around.
Well, they're back. The show's back.
Yeah.
They're on it.
Yeah, but I mean, like, in the long term. Like, how long do head writers usually last on that show?
I think it just depends. I mean,
I guess Seth Meyers was on there for a long time.
Yeah, Seth Meyers, I think, was on there for like 11 or 12 years.
Yeah.
Before that, it had been Tina Fey.
Do you guys watch the Woody Harrelson premiere of SNL?
I did.
It was not good.
Oh, I thought it was fun.
SNL's always been hit and miss.
I know. I thought it was a pretty bad episode, though. And I mean, Woody Harrelson, I love Woody Harrelson, but come on, dude. Like, he was awful. The reading off the cue cards, he was awful.
But they order you to read off the cue cards.
The last time somebody did that, it was it Adrian Brody. and he showed up in like that Rastafarian gear, yeah. and he never was allowed back. Like he's never been allowed.
I don't.
Back.
What does that have to do with anything?
Well, I mean, like when you go off script, Lorne Michaels is like, "You're out."
But no, it's not about staying on script. It's about they order you to read the cue cards. Like so, the cast they're better at it
because right. like the cast are acting off of him. Like, oh look, they're so natural and good. And then he's like,
the reason for that is they're changing the lines. Mm-hmm. I mean, up until airtime, and so like they do. When we see SNL, that's the second time they've done that show that day.
Yeah, right.
Sure. So they do, so it airs at 10:30 our time. They do our time, a 7 o'clock dress rehearsal.
Right.
That they film. And then that way, if there's any sort of technical issue, a power outage, a brick falls on somebody's head,
they've got a backup.
They can run the dress rehearsal if need be.
Yeah.
That's also where when you see sketches that get cut and you're like, but if it's live and it got cut,
right.
why does it exist? It's because they film it in the dress rehearsal. So they'll do the dress rehearsal, and then that's where they get an idea of like, how long is this show really?
Sure.
With laughs and everything. How long did it time out?
I think I've seen them run something from rehearsal.
They
too.
Do
there
sometimes.
There was an issue where something happened. They had to play. They said this was filmed at the rehearsal. What was it? Someone got sick that night?
I can't remember.
They were like, this is from the rehearsal.
Sometimes if they mess up on the live one in the rerun, they'll sub in the dress rehearsal version. So, but they're still changing lines sometime. In between the dress rehearsal and the airing. That's so like
they don't want them to read the old lines.
They do not want them to memorize the script. That's not them being lazy.
Yeah.
It's the reality of how quickly they're making changes on that show.
That's the Mulaney Dan Cortez
when he referenced
Bill Hader,
Dan
Cortez joke.
Yeah. And they would do that all the time. Yeah. The what's the character's name? The guy that would do all the night when Bill
Hader. That's Bill
Hader.
Yeah, Bill Hader.
But what's the character?
Stefan.
It was almost like Mad Libs. They would write a version that they would do in dress, and then
Mulaney would come back through
and change all the references.
And that's why he would let break.
Yeah, and that's why he would break. Because
the whole Dan Cortez thing was not in the dress rehearsal.
Because he was reading it.
The first time he was reading it was as he was doing it. So he knew the general outline and the cadence, but he would change things.
Right.
In between dress and air.
To get him to break.
To get him to crack up.
Or if you're Jimmy Fallon, you just couldn't make it through a sketch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, he was striving to be his generation's Harvey Corman.
Yeah, right. Except, you know, he didn't have what's his name to play off of?
Tim Conway.
Yes.
Yes, Horatio Sands is no Tim Conway.
No, he's not.
But those two, anytime you saw them together in a sketch,
it was,
you just
gonna
knew
make it.
It was going to
He was. He's never. I don't think he can even make it through his own show.
Yeah.
But I think the Woody Harrelson episode, though, I think they ran short.
Oh, really?
They did two sketches post musical number, which typically only get one. And so I think they were just really like out of stuff and like nothing got cut, and they still didn't have enough time, because then they come back, and the way you can always tell if it ran short or long is when they go to credits, when they're waving goodnight.
Yeah.
If it's short, they're like, okay, good night, and they start to roll the credits, and it's like, cut.
Sure.
And they're done.
Right.
But, like, they were on stage. I mean, it felt like those credits lasted 3 or 4 minutes. It was. I always like to watch the credits because you can see, like, if there's a sketch that got cut, somebody standing in a costume for a sketch you never saw.
Yeah.
Or you can also kind of tell, like, who likes who. Like, what the...
Well, who saw who, where they're standing
with
each other.
Yeah, like,
what
the personal, you know, or who didn't really like the host. Or, like, you can kind of get a gauge for that sometimes.
They had the guy who's the newest cast member who just got moved up to series regular.
Chris Redd?
Yes. Okay. He was on the roast of Alec Baldwin. And Sean Hayes was there as well.
Yeah.
And he makes a comment, and he was just like... Makes a comment about how Alec Baldwin... would cut this guy's jokes for time because he was on the show. He was like, actually, we're just going to cut your whole set for time tonight. Like, you're not going to be on. We're just going to cut you for time. You're used to it at this point when this guy's on your show, so it's fine. But that roast was amazing.
It's very
funny.
I saw Chris Redd when I was in L.A. We went to the improv.
That dude.
And this was before SNL. This was pre-SNL.
Yeah.
And it was one of those showcases where they have like open mics there, but they're all professional comics. So it's like, You know, it's
you'll
go to an open mic and it'll be, you know, and it'll be like Dane Cook and the Sklar brothers and Mark Maron and Sebastian Maniscalco. And like, it's, you know,
a weird conglomeration of past and present comedians.
Yeah. But it's just like, but you'll just pound through big names. And like Margaret Cho showed up at this one.
Okay.
And then Chris Redd was there.
Yeah.
But
is he on SNL at this point?
No, he's not on SNL at this point. It has not been announced, but I recognize him because he's the other like pop star, and pop star never stopped.
Oh,
popping.
Sure.
And so I was like, where do I know that guy from? I'm like, oh yeah. And so, and then afterwards he's in the bar and we were like, I was like, oh, I should go over and say hi, just cause why not?
Right.
Like, he can't be getting that many people come up to him at this point. And so, but he was hitting on a girl.
Oh,
and I was like, so if we go over and talk to him, cause his set was really good.
Yeah. He's really
his stand up was really solid. And I was like, so he's hitting on this chick. So I'm like, if we go over and talk to him, we either completely screw it up,
right,
or we make him look like a really big deal because he's getting recognized by
a 50-50 shot,
a couple middle-aged tourists from the Midwest,
right?
And I was just like, I don't want to roll the dice.
Yeah, so too close.
We didn't do it.
I think he's one of those dudes that I think could.
Yeah, and then we came back home, and like 3 weeks later, it was announced he was a new cast member on SNL. And I was like, if I had known that, I'd have been like, screw it.
You're going to be fine.
You're going to be getting lots of chicks.
they were worried about the amount of trans jokes on that podcast, not on the podcast, on that roast, because Caitlyn Jenner was there,
right?
And they just lit her up, and apparently she was in good. Like, she took it, and she
roast. I mean, they really
that's
don't.
That's
kind
of to me, like, that should be a protected environment. Like, that's the point of a roast,
right?
And if that upsets you, that's fine. Then don't go.
It's almost like, what was the one where Ann Coulter showed up, and I'm just like,
oh, that was awful.
That what one, like, are you thinking?
Yeah, like
Trump.
No, right? No. It was like Rob Lowe or...
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, it was somebody
else.
Because
I think he's a Republican, I'm pretty sure.
Rob Lowe is?
Almost. I think so.
Interesting.
It was either Rob Lowe or Trump.
I don't think they would... Well,
although now I'm thinking... Because when he had the sex tape, it was at the Democratic National Convention.
See?
I thought he had flipped.
Maybe he did.
I don't know.
But either way, when I saw Ann Coulter on like the whatever that thing's called...
The dais.
I was like, oh, buddy, that is a... What are Nikki Glaser got up, St. Louis's own, and just I honestly, there was a point where I was like, you should probably just walk off stage. Like, I don't know how you're taking this, because every single person, they brought up Bill Maher, and it was just like, woo, bold move, sit on that stage with a bunch of like take no names comics who don't care about offending anybody.
Yeah, I think Lowe leans right these days, because he had to delete a tweet where he made a chief joke about Elizabeth Warren, and here's a headline from the Hollywood Reporter with him welcoming Sarah Huckabee Sanders to his one man show.
Interesting.
So,
I mean,
yeah,
you know what? I don't have a problem with somebody leaning right, as long as it's not like
he's not a flamethrower.
You're crazy pants.
Yeah,
you know, like, but that, like the eat the babies gal.
Yeah, I was I was just trying to say, like, if it would make sense
that she was there.
If he's a conservative.
I think that was his.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they've been cranking those out.
They've been doing it for a long time.
Well, they've kind of got back into it just recently.
Yeah.
But yeah, go check out that Alec Baldwin one. It was really good.
It's nice to, a lot of those old Dean Martin roasts are up
so
on,
good.
On YouTube and stuff. You can find them.
Are they?
Oh, yeah.
I thought they didn't release the old ones.
You can find some of them.
Yeah, they had a thing that you could buy from Time Life.
Yeah.
Really?
On, where they would have a bunch of them, like, you know, John Wayne and.
I want to watch the old ones.
Yeah.
There's one where Don Rickles goes after Reagan.
Yeah.
Like, in front of Reagan.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just like, oh.
And Reagan loved it.
I loved every second of it.
Loved every second
of it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You have to know if you show up to a roast. I mean,
right.
But that's where, I mean, they're the most offensive, harshest jokes.
Well,
like, that's what you're there for.
Well, so the celebrity roast that Dean Martin did, they were on network television. So they might get mean, but they didn't get dirty.
Right.
But like
Comedy Central ones.
The Friar Club roast, especially what they, because that's what the Dean
that's
Martin ones were modeled on. Is
right.
They were, but they had to clean them up for television.
But those weren't recorded. Those were just like.
There are some people snuck in tapes. I used to have a CD of somebody who had snuck in tapes. And like.
But they'd say crazy. For the most part, they wouldn't, they wouldn't air them. They
right.
weren't meant to be recorded.
No, they were
so
not
they
meant
would
to
say
be
the
aired.
Craziest
oh,
stuff.
And I mean,
be,
just the most.
Yeah.
I mean, racist, sexist.
Yes.
Like, but that was the. That
and
was
that's
the,
how these are now.
Yeah,
and they're on network. Well, I guess they're on cable TV.
Yeah, but they were They were pretty harsh, but again, that was that was what you, you knew what you're getting into.
Sign up for,
and that's how comedians are too. Like that was also part of it. It was like it started as it's a club for comedians.
Right,
and comedians have very dark senses of humor, and they're pretty much unoffendable. That's why sometimes they offend people and they don't even know it because they're just like, "Whoa, what? Does that upset people?" Whoops.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you heard. Comedies are canceled now, so
I think. I feel like there has been like a big pendulum shift in comedy recently, where guys who are in this movie kind of don't pull any punches with their stand-up act anymore. And it's like, if you don't like it, I don't care.
Yeah,
I don't like. There's in The Joker, there's a couple comedians who are real comedians.
Yeah,
who one is Sam, I can't remember his last name, but he's got an act, and you're just like, his delivery is so deadpan. You're just kind of like, all right,
yeah,
I'll let it go. I don't know how it's gonna play in front of an audience, but they're talking about Chappelle and how Chappelle pulled no punches.
Yeah,
in his most recent thing, and got
it's a lot easier to do when you're
Dave
Rich
Chappelle
is,
well, yeah, yeah, when you have nothing to lose,
yeah,
you don't need
and you're,
the work.
You're a guy who's, you know, a beat comedian, so to speak, where you're just trying to play the clubs and make a break, and
yeah,
you've got 5 minutes to hopefully get
right
more work.
That's
when,
a little different.
Chappelle's like, yeah, I'm just say whatever I want, I don't care.
Yes,
I'll take that $5 million or whatever he got paid for those specials.
A lot
of money, and then I guess
more than five. It was like 500 million.
No, it wasn't.
It was a lot. It was like 100, 200. It was insane.
I wonder how much Rock's getting paid
He sold Netflix two specials with a third, which was this one
with like
coming.
An option.
Well, it was like he had to produce a new one, but it was two old specials. That's why
a lot of the material wasn't
topical. Yes.
Got it.
And it was a lot.
I mean, he's
$60 million.
That's still a lot of money.
Yeah.
I wonder how much Chris Rock got paid for, if not Chris Rock, Eddie Murphy got paid because he's doing one too, right?
Yeah,
for Netflix.
He's coming back.
Yeah,
so I'm curious as to like what that is gonna.
I think he signed a because I think the Dolomite movie,
yeah,
is part of that deal.
That
and
would
then
make
he's
sense.
He's gonna
to
do a stand-up special too.
I wonder if he'll be as raunchy as he used to.
No, so he said he actually came out and said he's like, look, what I said back then is not a reflection of who I am now.
I think
like
you could still be raunchy, but
in a different way.
That old stuff was like, I remember listening to that with my son when he was like 16,
like,
and I was just like, oh, Eddie Murphy. Like, he didn't even know Eddie Murphy had been a stand-up.
Sure.
You know? Especially because of that stuff is so not of this time.
No, not at all.
It doesn't pop up for people organically.
Yeah.
And so I went and somebody posted on YouTube, and so I was like, no, I'm like, Eddie Murphy was really funny.
Yeah.
But like by today's standards, like he would get run out of town on rail.
Without question.
It does not play well in this day and age.
Yeah.
Like, that red suit, was that Delirious?
Yes.
Delirious
no,
was
Raw.
No, I think it's
Delirious is the red suit.
Raw is the black suit.
Yeah. Ooh, I mean, 10 minutes, we've talked about it before, but I tried to watch that like 10 minutes into it, just the way he talks about dropping the F word, and I'm not talking about the four letter one.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is offensive.
Well, he's got
but
the whole thing with the honeymooners where they're gay, and he's like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just like, wow. I mean, he goes right into it, and you're like, what is this? I'm like,
What happened to the Nutty Professor?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it was hard to watch because it wasn't even like, it wasn't just like funny, like, oh, it's like a jabbing, you know, but it's funny. It was like,
no,
mean.
It was,
I don't know.
It's weird to watch those now. I feel like Richard Pryor was raunchy, but like didn't go that far.
I think it also helps that a lot of Richard Pryor's edgier stuff he would do in character.
Oh, sure.
And so
sure.
I think it's also easier when it's a character doing it as opposed to just that guy doing it.
That makes sense.
Like, I mean, like, my wife had never seen The Sopranos, so we've been watching The Sopranos.
Oh, so good.
And there are some things they say that are horribly offensive, and you still end up laughing at it, but you're like, but you're not, but also some of the joke is like, Jesus, these people are awful.
Can I tell you how much I adore that scene in the restaurant where he tells the guy to take his baseball cap off?
Yeah.
I like that hit a sweet spot for me. Because that is absolute. I've seen that happen.
Was it like a young guy?
It's wearing, a young guy.
Yeah.
It's a
and
guy.
They're, in
they're,
a nice
they're on a very nice Italian restaurant.
Yeah.
And Tony's talking to the owner of the restaurant, I think is who it was.
Yeah.
And this dude, you know, punk ass kid walks in with his girlfriend with his hat on. And the friend is just kind of like, you look at that disrespect. And Tony's like, he's trying to ignore it, but
he just
like
can't.
Keeps looking at it. And finally he walks over. He's like, hey, can you do me a favor and take your hat off? And he was just like, no, it's my hat. I'm going to wear it. And Tony just looks at him. And there's like a just a long enough pause where the kid's like, okie dokie, and like takes his hat off. And then in typical mob guy fashion, they go sit back down and Tony's like, hey, go send him a bottle of, you know, whatever. And the guy's like, okay, and walks over. But that was like just the, I've seen that happen in real life where it's just like, take your hat off. And the guy's like, no. He's like, take your hat off. He's like, oh,
yeah. My grandpa used to never let me wear a hat in restaurants. And I mean, you know, he passed away over 10 years ago now. But
I wouldn't in a like, real restaurant. But if I'm in a McDonald's,
that's different. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, yeah. And I don't.
Yeah.
And
a sit down, like.
But at a restaurant, I mean, as soon as I would walk in, he'd be like, take your hat off.
Yes, sir. Okie dokie.
Unless I'm at a theme park.
Then you're not wearing a hat?
No, if I'm at a theme park, I can wear a hat at a restaurant.
Yes, no, it's totally. But I think
you
if you're at
the,
like
the Moose Lodge or whatever.
Yeah, but you have to wear the big hat. You have to wear like the
Flintstones. You have to put their hat on.
Mouseers on. Yeah, right. Of course I have their hat on, Kevin.
Yeah.
We're at Disney World. Where else would I be? So shameless plug.
Not Six Flags, I'll tell you that.
That's for
damn. We haven't even introduced ourselves.
Oh, yeah. Why don't we introduce ourselves?
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, Spreaker, wherever you get
it. I better check to see if we're on Spreaker. I just like the way it sounds.
So while you're there, subscribe so you never miss an episode. Also, don't forget that you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, join the group, which we call the League of Show Sharers. You can also leave a review for us on Facebook. That way your friends will see it. And people who were kind enough to actually share an episode this week, are as follows: Gabriel Lugo, Librarian Cynthia, Ralph Tribble, Julianne Jordan, Zara Vandercreek, Griffin Fox Smith, Brent Smith, Chris Sanders, Tammy Sherman Powers, Ron Johnson, Lane Levanway, Colby Mack, Dustin at Nerds at Night Gaming, Travis Tewitt, Jason Weesey, Timmy Two Zunes, and Chris Magic Man. So thank you very much, guys, for doing that. And also don't forget we have a Patreon account, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month you can get all sorts of bonus content and help us pay for some of the costs of producing this thing.
Yes.
So there is all that, I guess. What's in the not necessarily the news?
We have a little bit of breaking news right now. Tom will appreciate. Well, won't appreciate this. Ginger Baker died.
Oh, I was like, oh, did one of the monkeys die?
No. Ginger Baker died. The drummer of Cream
passed
away just today. Like
he'd been
last...
sick for. They've been talking to him for a week or so now.
Oh, have they?
How he was not doing well.
Yeah, that's a sad day.
Yes,
he was the dude.
Yeah.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
There's been several people that have passed away, I feel like, in the last week.
The celebrities, man.
Popping all up.
Yeah. I just think it's because we have so many more celebrities than we used to.
Yeah, that's true.
Does anyone have news stories they want to share?
Yes, I do, actually. So I posted this week on the League of Show Shares that I'm sure you've seen by now, Martin Scorsese shared his thoughts on what counts as cinema. He was speaking to Empire Magazine, and this is the direct quote from him. "I don't see them. I tried, you know, but that's not cinema. Honestly, the closest I can think of them, as well-made as they are, with actors doing the best they can under the circumstances, is theme parks. It isn't the cinema of human beings trying to convey emotional, psychological experiences to another human being." And so, to me, I posted it, and it's one of these things where to clarify, because there's been a lot of people on the internet like, yeah, he's the greatest filmmaker alive and he can have an opinion, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, he can. I mean, anyone can have an opinion. You can like movies,
right,
not like genres. That's not the problem. I don't care if he just doesn't like them, but he's calling an entire genre not cinema. And
right.
And he says, I tried it, but I really wonder how
I would
much
love to
he's
know
tried.
Which movie.
Did he watch Spider-Man 3 one time? And he's like, I don't like Marvel movies. Because it's just to say they're not cinema and then to go on and to kind of define cinema as human beings conveying emotion to other human beings. I mean, has he watched Civil War, Endgame, for example, the
sure.
first hour of Endgame? I mean, even Black Panther. I mean, there's a lot of emotion. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which is one of my favorite Marvel movies. Look how deep that is with the issues with Star-Lord's father and talking about families and adopted families, you know, who's more a family. I mean, there's so much emotion and being conveyed by the cast. So I think that's really offensive and why James Gunn spoke up about it, because it's like you're lumping everything into one category and saying that isn't cinema. And I don't think that's fair.
It's also weird because I feel like he's always been kind of a defender of genres or films that are maybe perceived as less artistic.
I mean, he's made his bones in films that are genres that can, you know, aren't very artistic.
Yeah.
I mean, the mobster movies are, I mean, he has defined those movies.
Yeah.
But he, you know.
I mean, his early stuff is very artistic.
Right. Totally. Oh,
yeah,
I agree.
Artistic.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, he liked to take I hate to say lesser, but more mainstream stuff and dress it up with artier flourishes.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cape Fear.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good one.
Shutter Island. Right.
Which I just rewatched.
Yeah.
That's a good movie.
Yeah. I mean, and it's just a really solid airport novel.
But yeah, tell me Shutter Island is cinema?
Right.
I mean,
I think there's a difference. To me, I don't really think like cinema. I think of like films and I think of movies.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of my, like,
I think that's what
if you're
going
to compare Civil War to The Godfather, like you can't do that.
Yeah.
Like Godfather is a film.
You can't tell me that some of his earliest film experiences weren't serials.
Sure.
And, you know, cliffhanger type things and B pictures. I mean, you know, I'm sure he saw great movies as a kid and they inspired him, you know, and a lot of the stuff that people thought were just run of the mill Westerns were secretly great movies, right?
Right.
And I think that's kind of what he's missing out on here is that in the same way people looked at The Searchers at the time and just thought like, oh, cool, John Wayne's going to kill Indians. And
right.
You're like, oh, no, there's a lot more going on here.
Right.
But at the time, people just took it as at
John
face
Wayne
value.
Killing Indians.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of that going on in the superhero genre right now.
Oh, I think that's true.
And I think what's driving this ultimately more than superhero movies being plastic and theme parks. I think what drives it is he's a director.
Yeah.
And he came up in the age of the director is auteur.
Sure.
Whenever you talk about a discussion of the director is auteur, he's typically the first one that gets mentioned.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And he
Kubrick.
You're going to hear Kubrick, Scorsese, Francis Ford Coppola, and these Marvel movies, the director is not in charge.
That's true.
The director is not the auteur. It's the producer.
Right.
You know, and they have a showrunner, like a TV show, and it's Kevin Feige, and he's calling the shots. He's drawing the picture. You're just coloring, but
right.
You better stay in between the lines. And
yeah, don't do anything weird.
Right.
Yeah.
But
you know what's interesting is I think the exception there is the Guardian stuff, going back to James Gunn. I think they really let James Gunn do. That was one of those movies where they're like, these are some weird characters. Like, they didn't know what was going to happen there. And that is a total James Gunn script.
Yeah.
And I think they let him do that. Like, because James Gunn has even talked about that there was a scene that they filmed. I can't remember. I think this might have been in the first Guardians. I'm not sure. But he tweeted about they came to set. It was a really small scene and they did it. And then everybody, I think it was like Feige, some other producer involved, and they were like, that was okay, but like, I don't feel like it's James Gunn enough. And he rewrote the script and totally expanded it. Like, I feel like they let him be an auteur because they were like, Guardians, what is this property?
Well, I think I've always said I feel like they've hired directors because they want that director to do a certain thing.
Right.
And so I think, and I don't mean to sell the director short, it's just you're working in a different paradigm,
yeah.
You know? And I think James Gunn probably gets the most freedom.
Yeah.
Out of any
yeah.
of those directors, but I think that
feels the least connected. I mean,
yeah.
there's you can connect them, but they do very much stand
yeah.
on their own.
But I also think that's because they decided they wanted it to be this way, and that James Gunn was the guy to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they started off making a straight ahead action movie, and then James Gunn said, "I'm going to do all this stuff instead."
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And they were just like, "Well, what you going to do?"
Well, I think the advantage that he had is the story wasn't set on Earth.
Yeah.
So he was not tied into...
It had the least connective tissue to the rest
yeah,
of it. So
exactly.
It could get...
He had Thanos and that was it.
It could get weirder because you didn't have to necessarily... Even though he ends up standing yeah. next to Iron Man, you initially...
That was...
If you can watch one and two and have never seen the other movies,
yeah,
and it's
right.
fine.
Yeah.
You seriously don't even need to know. Like, you know what I mean? Think about how many tie-ins there actually are in the movies, not Avengers, but those movies themselves.
It's
like, you can watch
Thanos.
One and two, and
like,
but yeah,
there's reference to Thanos, and that's it.
But that's because they introduced Thanos, right?
No, Thanos is introduced in the first Avengers.
He is? Okay.
Yeah,
he's
the end credit sequence.
You see him, and you do see him in Guardians, right? Don't they? Because Ronan talks to Thanos.
Yes, you're right.
So
yes.
I just mean that you're not like, who's this? Like, I feel like you could watch those two movies and they stand on their own, whereas a lot of them, you get a lot of little Easter eggs and references.
That was what made that comic so good, is that Abnett and Landing, who wrote like Annihilation and all that stuff, like they kept everything in space. So anything that was going on, like the actual Civil War in the Marvel Universe, like in the comic books, they had nothing to do with it. So they were just off doing their own mm-hmm. thing. So if you wanted to read Guardians, you could, and you did not have to read any of the other Marvel stuff to know, like, whoa, wait, who's this guy? That's who's cool. this person? Yeah. Like, they just did their own thing.
And they used to do that a lot, especially, or if there was a crossover, it was kind of only the cosmic stuff.
Right. And that's what it is. It was all just like all Adam Warlock and Nova, like all that stuff circled around the Guardian stuff, but never went to Earth. Like, it never dealt with Earth until they were just like, well, we need those characters back on Earth.
So,
but yeah, I think it's because he's like, but the director's supposed to be making these choices.
Yeah.
Not Kevin Feige. And I don't even know if it's that much in his forebrain. I just think the process skeeves him out because it is so not the world that he plays in.
Well, he's very lucky because there's not many directors out there that can do that. You know, it's him and a handful of guys.
Yeah.
I mean, that honestly is like when the 1% say something to relate to the little people. Yeah. And you're just like, you have no clue. I mean, it's just how it is, you know, and I'm saying on either side, whether it's the highly paid millionaire, you know, super democratic or, you know, liberal actors talking about like, oh, whatever, and they go back to their $15 million mansion, or a Republican politician, it doesn't matter. It's like whenever someone is super rich and has access to things, they talk about, oh, I understand. It's like, no, do you?
Right.
And so for Scorsese to think that way, it's a shame because I do think he's one of the best directors alive,
sure.
One of the best directors ever. I still love his stuff. It doesn't make me not love his stuff, but he's very disconnected. And to say that a whole group isn't cinema, it sounds so pretentious and so snobby because I doubt that he's given, I mean, even how many of the 23 MCU films has he seen? And then there's obviously the stuff outside of the MCU.
We don't talk about that stuff.
But there's good stuff out there. I'm just saying, you know, and there is a lot of stuff that I think merits awards and critical praise, and obviously we've spoken highly about a lot of them.
Love Suicide Squad.
Yeah, that's not one of them. So the other thing is
love Logan.
That's true.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So look at that. Look at Logan as an example of a film of cinema. You know,
I think the one that we're gonna talk about this week is probably on the level.
If there ever has been one,
I don't think he would like this one.
Oh, I think it's a little too close to his own.
Yeah,
stuff.
Well, I think he'd be like, I already made that.
But I mean, like, if you're talking about like Logan. Oh, you know, like the style of Logan. I think this is in the conversation.
So Joss Whedon said something on Twitter about it.
That's the one guy I don't want to hear from.
So Joss Whedon came out and then he actually cited James Gunn before James Gunn said anything. Because like if I've ever seen an example of it, you know, he didn't say himself, or he actually said James Gunn has so much heart and all this. And then James Gunn actually did a tweet and he said, Martin Scorsese is one of my five favorite living filmmakers. I was outraged when people picketed The Last Temptation of Christ without having seen the film. I'm saddened that he's now judging my films in the same way. And so I think it makes a really good point because there's a lot of people now online saying, oh my God, you're comparing religion to a comic book movie and all this. But that's not the point he was making.
It was religion. People were, I'm old enough to remember that as it happened, and people were protesting that movie who had never seen it.
Yep. Yeah.
And to this day, I've never seen it just because it sounds boring.
It's all right.
I'm just like, oh, this sounds like a drag. Like it just sounds dull.
It's a very slow movie.
Yeah. But I also never saw his Buddha one or whatever. Didn't he do
Buddha one?
What did he do? What was the one?
Gamora?
No, he did one.
I don't remember that one.
Hang on.
But yeah, I think James Gunn makes a great point, and really because it's the same thing to judge a whole genre of movies and to say that every comic book movie is not cinema
based on one you may have seen in 2004.
Yeah, the game has changed.
Right, and he doesn't say what he saw. But.
Yeah, but I just doubt if he. I don't think people in his mindset. I mean, he's welcome to rebuke, which he doesn't care. He doesn't care what the internet thinks. But my point is, I would love to know what he has seen to make that opinion. And I doubt that he's seen enough to make an informed opinion. You know.
Thor 2.
He can not like him, but yeah, when he tries to see Avengers without seeing anything else and then he stops there, it's like, well, yeah, you're probably going to think they're a theme park, right?
But
there's a lot
of... And they are kind of. I don't take umbrage with that exact thing that he said, but to do a blanket statement over everything, like, sure, there are some definite theme park rides.
Yeah, absolutely.
In 24 movies.
And you know what? He loves Westerns, but there are some Westerns. I mean, they made so many of them. There's no way there couldn't be. But there are some Westerns. They're awful.
Yeah.
And you just can't paint in it. But there were people within that genre that did some stunning work. And
sure.
I think the same thing's true here. It wasn't Buddha. It was the Dalai Lama.
Oh.
Kundun.
Oh, okay.
I never saw that.
I didn't see that one either.
Hmm. But yeah, I think I hear what he's saying, and I can agree with it to an extent. But and I do feel like there is a difference between a film and a movie. And I think a lot of the MCU stuff, with the exception of probably the most recent stuff, are movies. Yeah. You know, there's summer popcorn movies, which that's what they should be.
There's a place, you know, when Kevin and I were talking about this online, I was like, you know, using that argument about, oh, it's a theme park ride, like Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Massive theme park ride.
Is that high art? I would argue yes, but not in an appreciably different way than Avengers is.
No, I agree.
You know,
I totally agree.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think you'd have to put those on a very similar level. And Raiders of the Lost Ark, great movie.
Yeah.
But is it The Godfather?
That's the thing. Is like, I mean, even to say Casino or Goodfellas, like, is it on the level of either one of those?
Some people Yeah, and those are great films. They really are. But a lot of people were like, Goodfellas.
I like Casino a lot. But
just kind of felt like a retread.
Right.
That makes
sense. But people are like, oh, slap an end credits scene on the end of Goodfellas and you've got a Marvel movie or something.
Kind
of. They're just like, I mean, they're not that appreciably different as far as, you know.
It's a hero's journey.
Yeah. So anyway. People say, you know, what do you say about all these movies that have to do with Greek mythology or comparing books? You know, are you talking about a book that is mythology isn't a novel because it's about Greek mythology, Zeus and the Iliad and all this stuff? Like, you're talking about powers and all these crazy adventures and everything. Are those not novels? Those are, I don't know, dime store rack books. I don't know what you'd compare them to,
right.
But when you start classifying things like that, it just becomes wildly unfair because there are so many subgenres and also so many examples of film, book, whatever art is within a genre to lump them on anything. I mean, it's just don't judge a book by its cover.
Right.
And
I
that's,
totally agree.
That's why I think The Last Temptation of Christ is a great argument because those people protested because they said, this is awful. It's bad against religion, whatever. And they didn't see that opinion.
It was dogma. Dogma. I'm not to compare Kevin Smith to Martin Scorsese, but Dogma was the same way. They're like, did you see? They're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
He's like, so you didn't see the giant rubber poop monster that's in this movie? They're like, oh, I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's the point.
Yeah.
You know?
And I just wonder as these amazing auteurs are aging and the landscape becomes different as far as how our movies are released. Martin Scorsese has a Netflix movie coming out. Is that cinema?
That's the weird thing, right? Like, are you telling? And look, I'm happy it got made. I am super excited to watch it. But there's not a company, Universal, Warner Brothers, anybody that would be like, you're doing what now?
Yeah.
Give us that movie.
No, they would. He could not get it. It's a $170 million movie that looks like it's a $60 million movie. From my research, from what I've read, like, there's not much to it. And when you put that price tag on it,
there's not much, like, as far as to the look of it or to the movie
itself.
It's
like a bunch of guys talking. I mean, it's just, it's not, it doesn't, $170 million movie is
a
superhero movie
nowadays.
Right,
yeah.
This movie, the only reason it's that high is because the huge cast and the de-aging technology, but it's not a movie that should cost $170. And he tried to get it made for like 10 years. No one would do it. And there's no problem. I like Netflix movies. There's just been some great ones. But my point is, here's this guy talking about, oh, these superhero movies aren't cinema, and you're about to release a movie to Netflix, dude.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is a streaming service. So, yeah, you're going to give it a theatrical run to get around the Oscar rule. Like, you're not doing that because it's going to play there for a ton and make a ton of money. You're doing it as a loophole. So you're releasing something on streaming. So are you prepared for it to say your movies aren't cinema? What is cinema at a theater?
That's the question.
You know, so it's like, I don't know. I think there's a lot of problems with that statement. He's a genius. I think he's great, but I also think it's okay to disagree with his phrasing there.
I'm interested to see like what the next, cause these guys are going to age out, like Spielberg, Coppola, who I don't even think directs anymore.
I think last time I saw him, he was doing like cable movies.
Oh, really?
Oliver
Stone,
heard from him
like the Scorsese. Those guys are gonna go
look
away.
At Eastwood. Was he 92?
106.
I have
no idea.
But he's like 92 or something. Yeah. But he's got a movie coming out later this year.
Oh, he does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Richard Jewell one.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Like, I wonder what that next class is gonna be of the auteur, or if that's even gonna be a thing anymore, or if like those directors, like Ari Aster, are going to stick with like A24 and maybe not take their original ideas and properties to Warner Brothers, Universal, or Sony, or whatever.
I mean, studios are going to have to find people, and they will pay those guys. You know, if they make enough money,
yeah, that's true.
And I think when they prove themselves in the minor leagues, like the A24s and Amazon Studios, and these amazing,
I gotta
production
tell you
companies.
What I just saw that trailer for Adam Sandler's new flick.
Oh yeah, Uncut Gems.
Whoa.
It's supposed to be incredible.
I am shocked.
I think it's, I've heard it's his return to like Punch Drunk Love, I think is the best thing he's ever done. And apparently this is like him acting.
I have sworn off Adam Sandler for, I mean, decades. Well, but I mean, like, I have good reason. Yeah. And this one, I was like, man, well, maybe.
But he's shown himself capable, but then he goes and does the movies that give him the paycheck.
Nicky and Grown Ups 5 or whatever.
Yeah, but the point is that these guys will move to the major leagues. Yeah. And I think that just like the Scorsese's and Spielberg can be the auteurs and get the money that they want for their projects, these guys will be too. I mean, they'll move into that position. They have to, because these people will just keep making the
movies. Or do you join the ranks of the MCU? And you're just like, well, you know, I can get paid. I can go do Nova 5 or Nova 2.
I'd see a Scorsese Daredevil movie.
Hell yeah, you would.
Well, I don't think you will. After
so, Gareth Edwards.
It's an interesting conversation. Feel free to chime in on the League of Show Shares. We've got that post there. A lot of people have. And again, we're not ever saying that someone can't not like a movie. I see a lot of response online of like, he's entitled to his opinion.
Yeah.
But it's like, we're not arguing that he can't not like them. I question his reasoning when he says,
sure.
You know, I've tried them and then they're all not cinema. It's like, well, really?
And yeah, and I think, you know, you got the fact that I don't understand why Marvel or Disney are not pushing for Robert Downey Jr. to be nominated for Best Actor.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense to me given what he
did. Yeah, look at that. That was one of the most recent, and that's exactly what I jumped to, because on the site, that's what I said. I'm like, so he's basically saying that Robert Downey Jr.'s performance in Endgame is the equivalent to theme park worker.
Yeah, I think
it's
him.
It's like, come on.
Between him and Chris Evans, like that 1-2 punch of both of those guys doing. I think Chris Evans should be up for Best Supporting Actor. Like that dude.
Tell me you didn't feel anything from those two guys in that movie.
Absolutely
it's like
not. I mean, absolutely. I can't tell you that because I absolutely did.
And but sure, it's the culmination of 23 movies or 22 at that point, but it's like, it doesn't matter. Still, that performance on its own is there.
Yeah, I agree. And I think they should both be up at this point.
Yeah.
If they're done, I don't know what's going to happen. I have no clue. We have no idea. We have an idea of what's coming out, but we have no clue what's going to happen. If he's going to be the new Jarvis, or that's what I would do. Be like, here's
Well, he's going to be in... Then they already say he's going to be in Black Widow because it's a flashback, so they're working him in.
Which
there.
Is weird, but then they've also got, like, they showed pictures of William Hurt. Is that right? Is that who played Thunderbolt Ross? No.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, like, walking with a cane, but he's not walking with a cane in, like, Endgame.
Maybe he's hurt.
Maybe.
I don't know.
But yeah, that movie looks
good. Well, he's William.
Yep. Fair enough.
I mean,
So
it's it's right there on Front Street. It's in front of us the whole time.
Who knew?
Well, after all that, we should probably. Turn our eyes to the box office. Kevin has his abacus at the ready, Kevin.
I do, Tom. And so it's no surprise here that the movie of the week, Joker, is number one. But the question was how much. It broke the record for October Thursday night previews. Previously held by Venom, which was around $10 million. It made $12 million Thursday. And that's with all the hoopla about threats and all that stuff.
I got to tell you, I saw it at Ronnie's and there were... 4 police cars, a canine unit. Like it was, I was like, God dang.
But you know what? Good. People should feel safe going to the movies. You know what I mean? Like, I hate that it's come to that, but you know, it's good that they're respecting the people, you know, like it's good that people want to go out and see a movie without feeling like that. I'm not saying that should be the new norm, but if there are threats out there and all that.
Well, especially with this one.
Yeah.
This is the one where people are like, well, it might happen.
Yeah,
like this
I hate that it's come to this, but I think it's a lot better than being like, oh, it'll be fine. You know, I feel that's cool that people, again, should feel safe doing something like going to the movies. So, but it made over $12 million on Thursday night. So the new October record for that one, it broke the pre-sale record on Fandango. And so now it is estimated, and I think this is probably low. These are early estimates, but it's estimated to have made $91.5 million.
Does it say on a what?
Weekend.
I think it was like 60 to 70.
Yeah, I don't have a reported budget on this, but that sounds about right for this type of movie. So, but they're saying that it should be around 150 worldwide this opening weekend.
Sure.
So it's probably at least doubled its budget opening weekend. So I think all the talk about it, I mean, it's had a ton of free advertising. People aren't staying away. And people certainly, I mean, it's human nature. They want to know what all the buzz is about.
Sure, absolutely.
Wikipedia lists its budget at 55 to 70.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah, so...
It's funny. I talked about that. Kevin McCarthy is that guy that I was talking about last episode.
Yeah.
And he did 2 sit downs with Joaquin and Todd Phillips. And like the Joaquin interview is what it is. Like I just accept the fact that Joaquin's just gonna. I don't know what he's talking about, and I don't think he does either. Did you know he grew up in the Children of God cult?
Yeah,
I had no idea.
It's fascinating.
Like maybe that leads a little to the psyche of Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh yeah.
But the Todd Phillips thing where he said that comedies are, I left comedy because it became, you know, society became too woke. And I was just like, yeah, but your comedies were like bro movies. As much as I love them, like The Hangover 1 and 3, Due Date, like those are, I think those are very funny movies. But the paging Dr. F word whole, like the whole scene in the beginning of Hangover when Stu is yelling at Helm's character. I'm sorry, Bradley Cooper's yelling at Helm's character. Yeah, it's like,
it just doesn't play anymore.
It doesn't play anymore. Yeah. And somebody made a comment. They're like, what are you talking? Like, there's all of these comedians and all of this stuff that aren't doing that anymore. And it's just like, maybe you need to, maybe you just can't do, I don't want to say elevated comedy, but like comedy that isn't extremely offensive.
Well, and but
I mean, it's his type of comedy as well.
Yeah,
what he's
and people's comedy tastes have always changed. I mean, you show a kid a Laurel and Hardy movie and see how far you get. You know what I mean? They're just like, this is dumb.
It's black and white. I don't want to watch it.
Right.
Why aren't they talking?
Todd Phillips excelled at that bro comedy.
It was right place, right time.
It was. Yeah, I mean, look at that. How that was, Hangover was the highest grossing R-rated movie of all time. And it made a ton of money. It rebooted the rated R comedies and everything. So it worked at the time, but we're just not in that time. And he doesn't want to change his comedic senses. That's what he does.
Which is fine.
And,
you have that. Yeah.
So I think it was a little bit of an overgeneralization. He said that what he meant to say, or what I took it as, is his type of comedy is dead.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to change it, but it didn't sound right. Almost like the Scorsese stuff. He may have said something a little different, but yeah, all comedy obviously is not dead, but his is. And I think him making this change is probably the best. If that's the kind of thing that, if that's all he knows how to do in that arena, then
were him and Apatow like coming out at the same time? Like, was 40-Year-Old Virgin the same time as...
Yeah, Apatow was earlier.
Was he?
I think so.
Okay.
I mean, Old School definitely was around...
They're fairly...
Yeah.
You know...
Going head-to-head for a while. And Apatow obviously has... I don't know if he's his comedy style is different.
Yeah, it's a different. Apatow isn't as much of a bro. Apatow is more of the lovable loser.
But he still has his issues sometimes.
Every once in a while.
You know how I know you're gay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? I mean... It's funny.
You have a framed Asia poster.
Right. But it's like, but it's also like, I don't know that they would shoot that scene today.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not.
You know?
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like that one isn't as egregious as paging Dr. F word.
I don't remember that part of the movie at
all. So it's.
When they're going to get him at the hospital.
They're getting ready to leave. And it's Bradley Cooper and the other guy and Zach Galifianakis, and they're in the car. And. Stu, Ed Helms' character, is having that awful discussion with his wife where, like, they're getting ready to leave and they're like, Stu's so awful. And like, no, he's a good guy. You just got to get to know him a little bit better. And he's saying, and he pulls up and he just starts screaming, paging doctor.
Yeah.
Gay slur.
Gotcha.
And then they're just looking at each other and he's like, all right, I got to go. But it's just like that joke doesn't play.
Yeah.
Now. But I feel like, you know how I know you're gay? Probably... isn't as offensive.
Like, it felt more like good-natured ribbing, but it's still you're using...
To just use...
I agree.
You're still using being gay as a punchline. Right.
But I think it's like the difference there...
In a way, I honestly, like, I think you could make the argument that the Hangover thing is less offensive because they're trying to illustrate... illustrates that he's a dick.
Yeah.
Right. Bradley Cooper's character was the bro-y D-bag character.
Who was taking the kids, like, you know, field trip money for his own Vegas
and I
money.
Think that
like, you weren't
is,
supposed to like yes. that character. You were supposed
to like Ed Helms.
And you're supposed... But you're supposed to like Paul Rudd
and
Seth Rogen.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that exactly. And that's the difference in what a lot of people don't understand with movies, whether it is Scorsese's movies like Taxi Driver and King Comedy that we're going to get into next episode, or it's The Hangover with the Bradley Cooper character. It's okay to put things in movies when you're trying to paint a character a certain way.
Right.
It's when the audience doesn't understand that they're not supposed to like someone.
And this is an example in the extreme. But like, you don't turn off Roots because they said the N-word.
No.
I mean, like, that's, you know, you don't walk away from 12 years a slave because there are racists.
Yeah. Right.
Because it's like those people aren't supposed to be good.
Right.
And this is in the same way that Blazing Saddles is such a genius, hilarious movie.
Totally.
And they're making fun of those people. You don't turn it off and say, oh, this is offensive. I mean, some people might, but the people that understand it don't, because they're like, yeah, these people are idiots.
Well, that's the Kevin Smith thing they had when he has that in the first Evening With, he has that conversation with the girl. This girl's just like, don't you think it's dangerous to say certain things? And he was like, yeah, but do you understand that, like, I put the thing that is wrong, I put it into the mouth of the character who's always wrong,
Banky.
Thus negating the argument.
It's Banky.
It is Banky.
Yeah.
And it's just like, she's just like, well, like, I get that, but do you think everybody gets that? He's like, that's not really my responsibility.
Yeah,
like, I can put it there and know what my intentions are. But if nobody gets it, like, I, you know.
Yeah. You're totally negating the purpose of cinema here as an art form.
Yeah, right.
The movies that spoon feed things to you, I think, are sometimes the most frustrating. I don't want everything explained. The audience is supposed to be able to interpret and form their own opinions. And when the director is an auteur, the writer is putting those things in there, it's not their job to make it easy for you. They're putting it out. It's their vision.
Right.
And if you don't get it, that's not their fault.
It's not
like,
their fault.
It doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it unless everyone gets it, because not everyone will.
I think there are plenty of movies that are completely misunderstood when they come out, and
sure.
then you take a 10 years and you look at it like, oh, I see what we're doing.
And sometimes people interpret them even in a different way than the filmmaker intended, and sometimes they can be viewed even better in that way because they didn't even know it, but it
or worse
or worse. Yeah,
not a movie, but I always feel like Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah,
when he started, he was making fun of those people, and it was funny,
right?
And it so and those that that they didn't get it,
and
they embraced
doubled down
him.
On it.
And then he was like, well, I guess this
crap.
Is what I do now.
What did we just see him in? A
Star is Born.
And he was like, oh, but you're not doing the character.
Yeah.
Okay.
He didn't start off doing the character.
No,
he was
the
on
Cable Guy.
He was on MASH.
He was?
He was on an episode of MASH as an actor.
Hey, what am I doing in Vietnam? Hey, look at you guys.
Star is Born just celebrated its 1 year release, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
It seems like longer
so
ago
Venom.
Than that, but oh well. Okay. So we're gonna get into Joker next time, but I think that's a pretty decent take for a movie like this, because again, it's not Avengers; it's a standalone origin story for a villain. Like, and it's a dark.
No, that's a great.
I mean, that's
my only fear is that I don't want to get more of these. I don't want more like, I want the origin story for Lex Luthor.
Oh.
No, I don't want that at all.
I we'll get into it next time, but I think, I mean, there's a reason why they chose Joker that's very fitting. But
yeah.
So coming in at number two is Abominable, which is the movie that we touched upon last week. 40% drop with $12.4 million. So, I mean, again, it's the kids movie that's out. So I think that small drop, luckily, it took that, because again, there's not really anything else to take your kids to. So that's $38.2 million domestic, and it only has 10 overseas as of right now. But again, that's an early estimate. But that's on a $75 million budget. So we talked about it last time that, I mean, it's not a huge take for that one. So we'll see how long it sticks around. And
I mean, Adam's Family is 2 weeks out, I think.
I think 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not looking too great for that one. But go listen to the review if you want to hear our
thoughts
on it.
Which I didn't realize that Nick Kroll, I think, is the voice of Uncle Fester.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, like that voice cast is actually pretty impressive.
Yeah, because he's in Captain Underpants, so he's kind of a DreamWorks guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty good cast for that movie.
Number three, Downton Abbey, still making the big bucks, though. $7.9 million, a 45% drop. That's up to $73.5 million. But don't you worry, Joe, another 50 overseas.
Good Lord.
On an undisclosed budget.
All
so.
Euros.
Right. So is this like the end of the show? Is that what this movie is?
Yeah, like the show has been
on. How is that kind of box office?
So far.
The wrap up to the show
so far, yeah, so we'll see. But that one doing quite well. Number four, Hustlers, in its fourth week, $6.1 million, a 46% drop, $91.1 million on that one, another 15 overseas, so it's over $100 million on a 20.
I mean, that's a hell of a win.
Yeah,
made some money. So we'll see if J-Lo can keep in the Oscar.
I mean,
buzz.
So far she has no competition yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some, but it was really early on, so we'll see how she maintains, especially as we approach this, you know, October, November, December Oscar time. Number five, It Chapter Two, $5.2 million, a 49% drop in week five. It's over $200 million. So, you know, it came out a little lower than we expected, but it's been plugging along here. Over 200 domestic and another 227 plus overseas.
Man,
so
that's huge.
I mean, it's approaching the $450 million mark. So, I mean, that's
crazy.
No shame in that.
No, hell
no. A lot
of
money. So, anyway, we'll see.
And with nothing, I guess Doctor Sleep, but that's post-Halloween, right?
Yeah, that's the week after, I believe.
Like, I just feel like with nothing coming out Halloween-wise, I feel like that's a
Zombieland.
Yeah, that's true.
I feel like it'd be smart. I mean, it's still making a ton of money, but in the next few weeks, you're going to see it drop more. And then if they release it on home video,
sure.
The week of Halloween.
That's what I thought. Based on how early it came out in September, I figured that was the that was the goal, yeah, was to get it on VOD in time for Halloween.
I bet it's going to be digital by Halloween. Yeah. That's a smart move.
For Zombieland 2, and I was anti-Zombieland 2 until I saw that trailer. I was like, well, if we just do the same thing, but I forgot all about that
movie. I love the first one.
The first one's great.
Yeah. So anyway, but yeah, it too making a ton of money. Judy, the movie that opened last week, is now wide release, $4.5 million, so a 54% increase on that one, and it's about $9 million domestic with no money overseas yet. So we'll see what that continues to do. And then at the end of the top 10 here, Ad Astra with 4.4, that brings it up to 43.5 domestic. Rambo Last Blood Part 5, the first, whatever that's called, $3.4 million, a 60% drop with about 40 here in the U.S. Good Boys, week 8.
Wow.
Jeez. $820,000 is a 60% drop. Talk about making some money here in its late weeks. 81.9, call it $82 million. And over 20 overseas, so still, that's 105 plus on a 20. Yeah.
Pretty good.
Rounding out the top 10, The Lion King.
What is happening?
Speaking of, week 12, so 3 months after its release, it's made another $700,000, a 58% drop, $541 million over here, another $1.1 billion overseas.
Golly.
So, yeah, you're...
Wait, $1.1 billion overseas?
Yes.
Wow, okay.
So yeah, we're approaching, before it leaves theaters here in the next few weeks, it's going to be around $1.7 billion worldwide. So on a $260 million budget.
That's, yeah, good. Well,
so that's money right there.
Yeah.
And that's the box office.
Well, thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome.
I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, B-U-T-T-S-21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Don't forget, you can find the show online, Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. Like our page. Join our group, the League of Show Sharers, and you can also share an episode, which helps us tremendously. You can also find us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play.
Spreaker.
While you're there, subscribe so you just know that you'll never miss an episode. And, of course, our Patreon, patreon.com/Real Spoilers, where for $5 a month you get bonus content and the pride of helping us out. There's pride involved in that, right?
I think so, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Pride and joy.
Yeah. So anyway, that's it for this one. Coming up on the next one, we will tackle the Joker. Until then, you've been warned.
Everybody's telling me that my stand-up's ready for the big clubs.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.